Chapter 7. It was worse now than it had been in the beginning. Duff abandoned his calendar, and with it the hope that had been slowly growing stronger. If the days were bad, then the nights were hell, for Duff had a dream. It came to him every night, sometimes two or three times. He tried to keep awake after Sean had left, reading by the light of a lantern, or he lay listening to the night noises, the splash and snort of buffalo drinking down at the waterhole, the liquid half-warble of nightbirds, or the deep drumming of a lion. But in the end he would have to sleep, and then he dreamed. He was on horseback, riding across a flat brown plain. No hills, no trees, nothing but lawn-like grass, stretching away on all sides to the horizon. His horse threw no shadow. He always looked for a shadow, and it worried him that there never was one. Then he would find the pool, clear water, blue and strangely shiny. The pool frightened him, but he could not stop himself going to it. He would kneel beside it and look into the water. The reflection of his own face looked up at him. Animal snouted, shaggy brown with wolf teeth white and long. He would wake up then, and the horror of that face would last until morning. Nearly desperate with his own utter helplessness, Sean tried to help him. Because of the accord they had established over the years, and because they were so close to each other, Sean had to suffer with him. He tried to shut himself off from it. Sometimes he succeeded for an hour, or even half a morning. But then it came back with a stomach-swooping shock. Duff was going to die. Duff was going to die an unspeakable death. Was it a mistake to let someone get too deep inside you so that you must share his agony in every excruciating detail? Didn't a man have enough of his own that he must share the full measure of another's suffering? By then the October winds had started, the heralds of the rain. Hot winds, full of dust, winds that dried the sweat on a man's body before it had time to cool him. Thirsty winds that during daylight brought the game to the waterhole in full view of the camp. Sean had half a case of wine hoarded under his cot. That last evening he cooled four bottles, wrapping them in wet sacking. He took them up to Duff's shelter just before supper and set them on the table. Duff watched him. The scars on his face were almost completely healed now, glassy red marks on his pale skin. "Chateau Olivier," said Sean, and Duff nodded. "It's a good wine. Most probably travel-sick." "Well, if you don't want it, I'll take it away again," said Sean. "I'm sorry, laddie," Duff spoke quickly. "I didn't mean to be ungrateful. This wine suits my mood tonight. Did you know that wine is a sad drink?" "Nonsense," Sean disagreed as he twisted the corkscrew into the first cork. "Wine's gay." He poured a little into Duff's glass, and Duff picked it up and held it towards the fire so the light shone through it. "You see only the surface, Sean. A good wine has the elements of tragedy within it. The better the wine, the more sad it is." Sean snorted. "Explain yourself," he invited. Duff put his glass down on the table again and stared at it. "How long do you suppose this wine has taken to reach its present perfection?" 10 or 15 years, I suppose," Sean answered. Duff nodded. And now all that remains is to drink it. The work of years destroyed in an instant. Don't you think that's sad? Duff asked softly. My God, Duff, don't be so damn morbid. But Duff wasn't listening to him. Wine and mankind have this in common. They can find perfection only in age, in a lifetime of seeking. Yet in the finding, they find also their own destruction. So, do you think that if a man lives long enough, he'll reach perfection? Sean challenged him, and Duff answered him, still staring at the glass. Some grapes grew in the wrong soil. Some were diseased before they went to the press, and some were spoiled by a careless vintner. Not all grapes make good wine. Duff picked up his glass and tasted from it. Then he went on. A man takes longer, and he must find it not within the quiet confines of the cask, but in the cauldron of life. Therefore his is the greater tragedy. Yes, but no one can live forever, Sean protested. So you think that makes it less sad? Duff shook his head. You're wrong, of course. It does not detract from it. It enhances it. If only there was some escape, some way of ensuring that what is good could endure, instead of this complete hopelessness. Duff lay back in his chair, his face pale and gaunt-looking. Even that I could accept. If only they had given me more time. I've had enough of this talk. Let's discuss something else. I don't know what you're worrying about. You're not fit to drink yet. You've got another 20 or 30 years to go, Sean said gruffly, and Duff looked up at him for the first time. Have I, Sean? Sean couldn't meet his eyes. He knew Duff was going to die. Duff grinned his lopsided grin and looked down again at his glass. Slowly the grin disappeared, and he spoke again. If only I had more time. I could have done it. I could have found the weak places and fortified them. I could have seen the answers. His voice rose higher. I could have. I know I could have. Oh, God, I'm not ready yet. I need more time. His voice was shrill and his eyes wild and haunted. It's too soon. It's too soon. Sean couldn't stand it. He jumped up and caught Duff's shoulders and shook him. Shut up! God damn you, shut up! He shouted at him. Duff was panting. His lips were parted and quivering. He touched them with the tips of his fingers as though to stop them. I'm sorry, laddie. I didn't mean to let go like that. Sean dropped his hands from Duff's shoulders. Both of us are too damned edgy, he said. It's going to be all right. You wait and see. Yes, it'll be all right. Duff ran his fingers through his hair, combing it back from his eyes. Open another bottle, laddie.